Output. Hi, welcome to Input Output. I'm Eli Janney.
And I'm Jeff Sanoff.
And today, what are we talking about? We're talking about some Metric Halo plugins. That's right. Metric Halo, you might remember them.
They used to make plugins, but they never stopped. Who knew?
Who knew, actually? They kind of faded away for a while because they were concentrating on other things. But we're talking today about this. They're sort of revamping their suite of their production suite.
And they've kindly agreed with Avid to port their product to the AAX format so yep. that it may be used on both HD X and HD systems and regular native systems and whatever, man.
Whatever you got.
It's going to be
It'll work. Awesome. Okay, so
what
does the production bundle include, Mr. Sanoff?
The Metric Halo production bundle includes Channel Strip 3,
Character,
Halo Verb,
Multiband Dynamics,
Precision De-esser,
Transit Control,
and Multiband Expander, now available in Pro Tools AAX format. But Eli, that's not all. If you register now, you also get the brand new Thump plugin.
Oh, that's right, yeah. Let's talk about Thump. Thump is basically a subharmonic synthesizer. There used to be an awesome hardware version made by DBX, which was the 120?
Yeah, but it doesn't really do the same thing as the 120. It's more it's in the same family of plugins, I would say, as the Little Labs Voice of God, which is to say that it adds...
Or Max Bass.
Yes, Max Bass. No, it's not like Max Bass.
Max Bass.
Maximum Bass. No. It's actually much more like Filter Freak being tuned to lower... It's like basically it generates a...
It's more like a Moog. Didn't they have a little pedal?
No, it's more like...
No, it isn't. I know
more. It's more like Big Bottom, Aphex Bottoms.
Big Bottom.
Hugging. No, it... Okay, so what is Thump? Mm-hmm. Thump is a set of two oscillators that are designed to be used, I think, mostly on percussive instruments.
Yeah, yeah.
So that you can add that extra sub to your kick drum. I've used... Oh, you've actually used it. Okay,
that's great. Shut up. Listen, I've used...
Don't tell me, shut up.
Okay, I tried it on some drums and on bass guitar and... It was hilarious on bass guitar because it's a synthesizer, so it's playing. You have to tune it to whatever note you want, so it's going to be out of tune with everything. The bass did not work.
Maybe that'll be Thump 2, where they actually have a track, and then it will be like a DBX.
Yeah, that's kind of interesting. But on the drums, it worked remarkably well. If you have a kick drum that sounds good, but it just doesn't have that lower octave like really happening, you can just dial in a little of this stuff, and it really fills out the bottom.
Well, and the fact that it has these two frequencies that it can generate between two things, which I don't totally understand how that's supposed to work, but it seems like it's intended, and we'll have to have
maybe we can get somebody on the phone.
From Metric Halo on the phone. How about that? It seems like it's intended to allow you to simulate the pew sound of a tom, you know, so that it can start high and go low.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Did it move? I never got it to move.
It can move, I think. But I don't...
Oh, maybe that's what the decay is for. I mean, the...
pitch. The pitch sustain thing. I know. It's
if
just
only
like,
I knew an audio engineer who could help me.
If only. If only I read the manual.
I glanced at it. I don't know.
Manuals are for jerks.
Okay. Anyway, what else did we try? Well, Channel Strip 3, which... that's an old classic, basically. Well, Channel Strip.
I know, I can't wait.
That's going way back. 1998, Channel Strip was released for Pro Tools.
Just quickly do a Wikipedia search for the year 1998 so we can find out what else came about in 1988?
I will, because I like that. 1998.
So 1998, let's go back to the Wayback Machine.
Wow.
Ted
Kaczynski.
The Unabomber was all the rage.
He pleaded guilty. CBS telecast The Wizard of Oz for the last time.
Oh, I'm so sad.
Telecasts.
What's a telecast mean?
Meanwhile, it's actually good. When Channel Strip came out, it was a revelation because it actually worked better than anything else, and it was all in one window, and it was really cool.
It also had a cool graph feature.
Yeah, and
but now they've actually updated the graph, which is really cool.
Well, I wonder whether I wonder if it's the same algorithm because They must have updated. Well, it's called Channel Sip 3, so I guess it's been updated
a few times. It's three times as good, man.
We shall ask our man from a metric halo. What else did you think? What did you think of Thump?
I liked the... Oh, the Thump? I liked the Thump.
I like Thump.
Well, Thump is great. It's not simple. It does have good presets, though. Mm-hmm. So that makes something that is otherwise somewhat complicated, I think, to figure out. It didn't take me very long to get it to do something exactly what I wanted it to do, which is add the sub octave to a kick drum or add the actually more add the punch. But trying to figure out how it all sort of did more complicated things, it seems like it has so many knobs. So my instinct is like, oh, it's got a lot of knobs. Let's see what they do.
Let's twist them
all.
And
the only ones I could really kind of get to do anything were the ones that...
Sustain?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I found the frequency and the sustain thing, and it did exactly what I wanted it to do. So I liked it. I also like the de-esser, right. And the de-esser is really cool because it has such a good, you can hear the trigger for the de-essing, so you can find, you can really dial in the frequencies that you want. But then you can also hear, it's like before and after, just the sidechain. It's pretty cool. Like, they really give you a lot of different, and also they have this wonderful graph, the Spectrafood graph that they've incorporated into a bunch of
really
other
on that too?
Plugins. Yeah. So you can see where the sibilances are. It's like...
I didn't get a chance to play around with it.
I think it's one of the better de-essers I've
I gotta say that
in the digital realm.
Yeah, de-essers are kind of the redheaded stepchild, and
you can really need them, but they don't always work that well. It's weird. Like the analog ones always seem to
really,
be more.
People don't really put a lot. Seemingly don't put that much effort into them. You know, this one seemed like it was a little more tricked out. It could be the ticket for all you people into de-essing.
And who's not into de-effing?
No judgments here.
The transient control.
Oh yeah, transient control. So
that
you,
was the
you,
one I was
you didn't,
a little bit
you didn't like that
by.
Too much.
I wasn't loving it. I didn't feel like I totally got it to do.
It didn't go.
It didn't go to like 60. It
doesn't go
like
to
40.
11. Yeah, you know that I kind of agree. I liked it, and it started to get there, but it seemed to on the max setting it didn't. You know, I was hoping for the super crush.
You know,
and like the SPL one,
it wasn't blowing my mind. I look forward to hearing how it should blow my mind.
Yeah,
the transient control reminded me of, and I'm going to cut you off yet again.
Go ahead.
That's how I roll.
Go ahead. No, no. That's
what
fine.
The transient control reminded me of, it's just not quite aggressive or extreme.
Well, you know, I think that's I kind of felt that way over on all of the plugins. I feel like they go for a much more subtle approach to it, a much more fine controlled approach to it, because the transient control, I feel like it did great things, but then it just at the maximum setting, it didn't. I wanted it to go more and just really like maul the sound, but it wouldn't. It sounded great.
It reminded me of being a young Sprout engineer guy and being like, you know, I don't think this 1176 is really doing much. Unless the needle's moving, I don't think it's compressing. There's a little bit of that to their metric halo stuff where it's just subtle enough that if you don't have ears that are kind of well-tuned, you're not going to necessarily pick up on some of what's going on. And that's, I think that's got to be part of their design philosophy, that they want it to be not a giant character button, but a more subtle approach to sculpting audio.
Yeah. I think so too.
You know, which is a good thing. It's probably more suited in some ways to mastering because it really gives you a lot more fine-tuned control than it gives you.
Well, there's also, I mean, let's talk about their reverb plugin.
Reverb plugin, I liked a lot.
Yeah, but again, I thought it was really dense in a beautiful way, and the tail on it was great. I don't know. I just thought it was kind of understated in a way that made it sit in the mix. That was really nice and was kind of funny because. We're talking about not being extreme. That's kind of, it seems to follow their line of philosophy.
Of not being extreme.
Extreme, not like input output.
Right. No, this is extreme
we
podcast.
We are so extreme. That's called the halo verb, by the way. Not to be confused.
I was calling it the holla.
Holla verb.
We should give them that, you know.
You can have that one for free.
Input, output.
We are here today with BJ Buckhalter. Is that how, am I mispronouncing your name? Probably.
That was perfect.
Oh.
Wow. Good.
From Metric Halo Labs. thank you for agreeing to talk with us today about your software products. So I guess the first thing maybe you could do for us is just give us a little bit of a description of the history of your software in general? Because I know it goes back a few years.
Yeah, actually, this is the 15th year that Metrikala has been in business. And our original product was a product called Spectrofu, which is a audio analysis tool.
Wait, why'd you call it Spectrofu?
Spectrofu? It's an, actually an interesting story.
Or is it pronounced Spectrofu?
The basic backstory on that is that when we first started doing this, I had just gotten a PhD in physics, and my brother was in
a
touring band called Como Zoo. And they had put together one CD, and they felt like they had spent an awful lot of money and weren't really getting what they had wanted to get out of the whole process. So we had looked at what it would cost to put together a project studio. Remember, this is 15 years ago. It wasn't that cheap back then.
Oh, no.
And but we figured that it would still be less than going into the studio to record another CD, and that way they could go and spend their time figuring out exactly what they wanted to do.
And so then they broke up.
We built a studio. And as part of building the studio, we built a room, and I had done some acoustical design for the room, and I wanted to analyze the characteristics of the room. And we went looking around for audio analyzers and found that everything that was available on the market at the time was more expensive than we had spent on building the entire studio, including the gear. So I've done a lot of FFTs in my time while I was writing, while I was working on my PhD. I know how to do that. So I set about to writing an audio analyzer. After we got it all up and running, but before we started selling it, we had it strapped across the two bus in this project studio. And this front of house engineer who had been working with the band over the years, and whenever someone would come up to him after a good night and say, "Hey, that was a great mix. You know, you did a great job." He'd say, "Well, you know, it's a foo thing." And when he was looking at Spectrofu running across the two bus as he was working on a mix, he's like, "Man, this thing just shows you what the foo is." And that's where the name Spectrofu came from.
Foo meaning fuck ups. Can we say that on our podcast?
I think foo in, you know, like in the way of, you know, how to get it exactly where you want it to be.
Huh.
Yeah.
Foo.
This must be a West Coast thing.
No, but you're not. You guys aren't West Coast. Were you? You went to?
No, we're not Mexico Coast. And the guy who is actually who came up with the term was a Minneapolis guy.
Oh,
okay. Oh, Minneapolis.
Say no more.
So maybe it's a Minneapolis thing. So in any case, we built Spectrofu. We went and showed it off, and early on, we started talking with DigiDesign, and they were like, "Well, that would be really cool if you could actually get it to work in TDM." And so we set about trying to figure out how to get it to work in TDM, which was no small feat.
And so you had so much fun doing that, you wanted to port everything to AAX.
Well, exactly, right? Well, actually, you know, the thing is that AAX is so much easier to deal with than TDM ever was.
So then you came out with ChannelStrip, because I remember using ChannelStrip pretty soon after it was on the market. And, you know, I loved it because it had that really cool auto gain thing and that you could use to make drums sound all nasty. And it was also it was like the first kind of practical tool for both compressing, EQing, and, you know, gating or whatever. You could just sort of put it on any channel and have access to all the functions you'd need. And I don't think at that point there was maybe a Waves version that did something similar to that, but yours was graphically so much better that it sounded good. That's 15 years ago or so, maybe ChannelStrip's 13 years old, 14 years old?
Yeah, I think around 13.
What have you done since then with this product to make it 2012-able?
In terms of ChannelStrip 3, you mean?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. How do you update these things? Are you changing the algorithms, you know, as the processing gets more powerful, or does it scale?
I think that one of the reasons that people are still using the stuff that, you know, we wrote 13 years ago is because we did it right in the first place, right?
Right.
Oh, I mean, of course, you know, you would say that.
So the thing is that from an algorithmic perspective, you know, we were pretty happy with it. Where we saw things starting to become a problem for people was that, especially, was in the UI. And a big part of that is that, you know, I mean, screen resolutions have gotten much higher. So everything that was set for a particular screen resolution 15 years ago has become, you know, a postage stamp on the screen.
Right.
And so that was one of our big priorities in terms of dealing with channel strip in particular, was to go and say, well, if we take, you know, everything that we've learned and reimagine this plugin, what would it be? Sort of staying true to its original heart, and in particular, being able to maintain session compatibility going forward, right?
Yeah, that's because,
true. You know, that's how you get. That's how they get you.
Yeah, there's probably at this point hundreds of thousands of mixes with that plugin on it, and you know, people need to be able to go back or move forward based on things that they've already done, presets, things like that. So what we had done is, I mean, in the intervening years between when we
between came the Clinton administration strip, and now.
Yeah, exactly. When we came out with Channel Strip and when we came out with Channel Strip 3, over the course of that sort of 10-year span, while we were maintaining Spectrafoo and maintaining Channel Strip and just sort of keeping it going, we were also developing literally hundreds of plugins that ran on the DSP inside of the mobile I/O. You know, we had developed a lot of algorithms, and we stepped back and said, well, you know, if we were to take a look at building a modern Channel Strip today, what would we do? Especially now that we're looking at primarily either native processing or AAX, where we have a lot more DSP power, you know, what can we throw at that? So a lot of the decisions that we made have to do with either adding functions that was pretty clear as people were using the product, it would be great to have. For example, we added a limiter, especially when you combine that with that sort of over-the-top trashy drum sound. It was pretty easy to go over with the
channel strip
compressor.
Issue.
Yeah.
Right, you know, you could blow through the compression. So we added a limiter that you could actually control the overall max level without having to go and insert another limiter, and you could work with those things interactively.
And you added also the MIO function on the compressor, which, could you explain that to me a little bit? I read the manual,
sure.
But it's like the old settings are so kind of like, all right, here you go. Do you like this one? So, click, 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 click. And I'm not a big fan of presets, but your products seem to almost require them in certain ways.
Okay.
Oh, just because they're, well, you know, they're deep.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot to be able to do in any given one of them, right? So the MIO setting is, you know, essentially before we went and did the limiter on the mobile I/O, we said, well, you know, we've gotten this feedback, you know, the compressor is great for some things, but it doesn't behave like a normal compressor. That was sort of the feedback that we got from a lot of people. It's like, it starts compressing before you hit the threshold setting, and, you know, you can easily blow through the top of the compressor. It doesn't react quickly enough. And that has to do a lot with the way the algorithm was developed. It does stuff internally to smooth the gain so that it doesn't sound nasty. But as a result, the thing is, it has a sort of a limited ability to react. And the threshold is a result of sort of the way that the knee calculation is done. The threshold is basically where you hit sort of a certain amount of compression, but the compressor actually starts acting before the threshold is hit. So when we did the MIO compressor, we redid the algorithm and came up with something that I think that a lot of people feel is more controllable. You know, they are able to, when they set things the way that they're used to with other compressors, they get the kinds of results that they're expecting to get. And
yeah,
also, it has the ability to assert that gain very quickly. So rather than replace the compressor in Channel Strip 3, we just added that MIO compressor model as a fourth mode.
That's cool, because I actually think I like the older versions better, just because I like the gnarliness of what your compressor brings to the table there. In general, what would you say your design philosophy is towards these products that you guys have put on the market for AAX now?
Well, in addition to Channel Strip 3, there's a whole bunch of other products in the production bundle, right?
Yeah,
and,
exactly.
Our general design philosophy is, you know, we're not an emulation company, obviously. Like, we're not going and saying, well, we're going to try to faithfully recreate every element of this classic device. What we set out to do is say, well, if we were designing a device today, how would we want it to behave? And we set out to design the algorithms to behave in that way. What that generally means is that, you know, we tend to try to make things that you can use them and have them have a effect on the sound that is significant, but not necessarily, what's the right word, audible?
Yes.
Yeah.
We want to build things that unless you really are setting extremes on the settings, do really great things to the sound, but aren't like, oh man, that's just working.
It's
doing, so, you know, because the thing is that often you need to be making, you know, small changes that, especially in the aggregate, really slap you in the face, but you don't want it to sound like, well, I just compressed the crap out of that thing.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. That's kind of how it feels like when you're using the products. You're like, I know it's doing some nice things, but it's you really have to push it pretty extremely to get it to, you know, be in your face.
It's also I think it's funny that you guys are, I would say, kind of unique in a sense. Most people seem like they are trying to put their stamp on it. And it's almost like you're not trying not to put your stamp on it, but your stamp is a level of transparency that doesn't necessarily sell it as, this is the character. It's got character because it doesn't have character, or it's got character because it sounds like the original signal, but better.
Exactly. That's generally what we're going for, is the original, but better.
Cool. Well,
that's my whole thing.
we are in this podcast. We're also just running down a review of the whole production bundle. So we've been playing around with all the things, but I definitely dear to my heart is the Thump plugin, because I used to have a DBX 120 hardware unit, and Jeff had. Do you?
I
have
still
the
have
XP?
One.
You still have it?
Yeah, I use that thing.
Yeah.
All the time.
So we've been looking for it, and I have to say that your software version is the best one of those that I've heard so far. It really did what I've always wanted a plugin to do, which is fill in that lower octave on the kick drum without sounding fake, you know.
That's awesome. You know, it's funny because before we started talking about doing this podcast, I had never actually even heard of that device.
Really? Oh man. The DBX 120. Oh, yeah. I mean, it's a subharmonic.
It's just like, oh wow, someone made something like that before.
In analog, that's the whole awesome part about it.
Thing about Thump that struck me off the bat, other than the fact that I found it did exactly what I wanted to do and I could get there fairly quickly, is that it also has a lot of controls that I didn't understand. So perhaps you could walk us through that a little bit.
Yeah,
the two oscillators, and then you've got the pitch thing happening, and you can. And each oscillator has two frequencies. Like sort of maybe walk us through what the idea is.
Okay, so the basic idea is that when you run a signal into Thump, we're going to go and extract two different versions of the signal amplitude envelope from the input signal. One of those envelopes is going to be used to control the frequencies of the oscillators. And the other envelope is going to be controlling the overall envelope of the output signal. You know, the envelope is basically just tracing sort of the amplitude of the input signal. But you have controls over how fast it's going to react to the input signal. So if the attack is set real low, then as the input signal goes up, the envelope will follow right along with it. And if the release is set real low, then the envelope will follow down along with the input signal as well. Now, on the other hand, if the release is set up higher, then it will sort of decay slowly, right? So,
which you can make some hilarious effects with, by the way.
Absolutely, right? I mean, you can just make some really wacky sounds with this. So the thing is that you have these two envelope followers, and you're able to control how they react separately, right? So you can make it so that the envelope that's controlling the pitch of the oscillators is decaying slowly, and the envelope that's controlling the envelope decays fast, so that, you know, all you're getting is sort of the hits of what the input signal is. Or you can do it the other way around, so that pitch envelope follower is going to decay quickly and the amplitude envelope follower will decay slowly, and then what you'll be able to actually hear is the signal sweeps as the oscillators sweep in their frequency. The signal will be present and output while that sweep is happening.
So then, to put that in my stupid guy terms, you can either get like a oom or you can get a doo, right? That's kind of the...
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
That's one of those plugins that's really nice to have presets for because it's it's like a little bit... I mean, just listening to you explain it to me, I understand what you're saying, but it still sounds like I'm in like a Charlie Brown show, you know? Wah, 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 wah. Because it's just math. I mean, it's a... You do have a degree in physics, don't you?
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed.
Wait, so does your...
Actually, you know, you can actually make the Charlie Brown teacher sound with it, too. Womp, 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 womp.
Yeah, there you go.
That'll
there
be the,
you
secret,
go.
The secret preset.
Yeah, you got to put that preset up there, Charlie Brown teacher. Yeah,
we'll make it downloadable.
Well, we like that one. So the character plugin is another one that I thought, going back to your philosophical approach to things, of sounds the same but better. Like if you compare it to other saturation harmonic enhancement plugins on the market, a lot of them are a lot more extreme than this one is.
If you take a microphone and plug it into a tube preamp versus, you know, a solid state preamp versus a FET preamp, does it, you know, add a distortion box to it? No, it just subtly changes the character.
Yeah.
And that's what this product does.
Not if it's made by... Or...
Oh, actually, I did want to mention one thing about character and thump. And I don't know if you guys have tried this, but if you haven't, you should, because it's fun. If you go and you take a character and you put it on SoftSat or one of the other sort of more extreme... settings, and you run the output of thump into that, then you can use character to generate a whole series of overtones for the oscillator, and you can make it actually sound like a sweeping instrument.
Wow.
It's really neat.
That's funny.
I didn't try that, but
You were running last night. I noticed on the drums you had thump going into the soft set. So
cool.
I really like the idea that you put your spectrofugue graphs into.
Oh yeah, they're so great.
I can't believe no one else does that except for SSL has it actually on one thing. But you know you guys put it on everything, and it's like hello.
Very useful.
Why
Very
does
useful.
It take somebody 15 years to figure out that something as useful as that should be incorporated into an EQ? It's crazy. I'm glad you did it.
Well, thank you. You know, I mean, for us, we've been thinking about doing that for years in Channel Strip 2. The problem has always been that, you know, I mean, we had to jump through incredible hoops to get Spectrofu to work on TDM on OS 9. And actually, we never made it work on OS 10. One of the things that AAX has done for us is they've actually provided a relatively high bandwidth path of data back from the plugin to the... from the plugin algorithm running on the DSP chip back to the plugin running on the computer, which is what allowed us to enable that.
Awesome. That's kind of good to hear, because yeah, for people out there who are wondering why the hell they should bother with AAX, that to me is like, it speaks more for the ease of developing new and better products than anything else, and just the compatibility between different formats, which is really important if you're going from one studio to the next and you want to be able to have plugins that are sonically consistent, as well as, you know, having manufacturers like you guys do something that works. I mean, God, I hate having something every time I update, I have to like sit there and spend an hour researching what's going to potentially go wrong before I decide whether I'm going to take a jump or not. And it just shouldn't be that much work to do that. I like the de-esser quite a bit too.
De-essers always seem like the sort of
oh yeah, let's just throw a de-esser.
Yeah,
because
people don't seem to care that much about de-essers. You know, when they it's always like the afterthought, it seems like. But your de-esser seems very well thought out. You guys championing de-essers.
And the monitoring option seems very I really like the fact that there's so many different parts of the signal flow in that circuit that you can listen to, because it makes it a lot easier to find what you're trying to notch out and or control and get there.
One of the things that we're pretty pleased about with the de-esser is that one, the filter for the signal is actually linear phase. So there, on the one hand, there is some latency through the de-esser. I think it's about 50 samples or so.
What? 50 samples?
Yeah, 50. So about a millisecond, right? But the thing is that, you know, it doesn't change the signal in any way except for the in the band, and only when it's acting.
Sweet.
So yeah, it's so transparent. When it's not doing nothing, it's not doing nothing. It's not just
kinda... Right. And when it's doing something, you know, you barely can hear it except for the fact that the S's just aren't as
yeah,
loud.
That's what I noticed right out of the gate, was like, this is really not aggressive sounding. It sounds good. Like, because sometimes you put on a de-esser and all of a sudden you're getting compression and it's not what you really want. You just don't you're just trying to get the harshness to go away.
Most de-essers are pretty lazy, I it seems like.
Well, that physics degree is paying off again.
There you go.
Wish I had one of those.
Bunch of you guys with your physics degrees. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for talking to us today.
Thank you, BJ. Signing off from Metric Halo Land.
It was nice talking to you guys.
Any closing thoughts there, Jeffrey?
You know, it's nice to feel that sometimes you can feel the hand of a designer's philosophy in their product, and then actually have what you're.
I say our when we were talking about the plugins before, I think we're kind of spot on. That's it. Well,
Thump is going to be free, so there's no reason not to try that out. And if you like it, then you should try their other products, because I think if you're in the market for,
and it's Windows and
if
Mac.
You're looking for that SSL 1990s rock and roll character-driven aggressive sound, this is not the package for you. If you're looking for something that's really versatile and very and generally quite transparent, then this is exactly what you want, because that's what it does, and it does it well. You know what else I appreciated? I just thinking about just talking to BJ.
Yeah.
There are not very many people that will come out and say, yes, we really haven't substantially changed the algorithm we designed 13 years ago because we think it stands up. That's fucking cool, man.
He stands up to his...
You know, you can agree or disagree with that, but it's honest and straightforward, and it's not new and exciting and repackaged for 2012. It's like, no, this is what it is. It works now. It's consistent. It's been reported for this thing, and we've added all these really cool visual additions.
Oh yeah, I forgot to tell him how much. There's one cool thing about the all the plugins. There's a little button on there to expand the window with more views. So like, you don't have to look at the graph. You can, but if you have the screen real estate for it, then you can look at the graph. You can open and close it, which I thought was really cool, and some of the controls too.
Oh, you like that? And another thing about me. Let's talk about me.
So, I'm cool, and that's it.
Thank you for listening. This is Input Output Podcast. I'm Jeff Sanoff.
And I'm Eli Janney.
Input Output is brought to you in conjunction with Sonic Scoop. We appreciate your support. Send us your thoughts, comments, letters to inputoutputpodcast@gmail.com. Or follow us.
You don't even know what it is.
Twitter. Well, you're the guy that always says this crap.
All right, fine.
You say it.
Oh, okay. You can also follow us on Twitter at IO Podcast. And send us all kinds of whatever you like or don't like. Let us know. And it's also it's made in conjunction with sonicscoop.com.
Input output.